Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 15th year. This week, the podcast sits down with Jeff Silver and Jennifer Gaynor, both members of the gaming and hospitality practice at Dickinson Wright's Las Vegas office, to talk about the process and procedures casinos in Nevada went through when they closed down on March 17th. The GGB Podcast is brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the affiliate marketing site players trust when deciding where to gamble online. For information on how your online or social casino can get involved, visit iGamingPlayer.com. Often forgotten in the rush to close down casinos in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic is the regulatory aspect. What procedures do you follow? What do you do with the cash and audit process? How do you reconcile slot machine records and much more? In Nevada, it's even more difficult since the casinos have never closed since 1931, so it was uncharted territory. Someone who has seen everything in the state until now is former Gaming Control Board member Jeff Silver, who along with Jennifer Gaynor, his colleague from the Dickinson Wright office in Las Vegas, helped their clients navigate the minefield of compliance hurdles during the shutdown on March 17th. They explained the thought process of the regulators, the concerns of the operators, and the possibility of how the casinos will reopen once the all-clear is given. They met with me at the GGB offices in Las Vegas, Gaynor in person and Silver over the phone. The interview was conducted on March 31st when the lockdown order from Nevada Governor Steve Sisolak was extended to April 30th. Jeff Silver and Jennifer Gaynor, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. You sent out a release earlier this week on the procedures that they went through in Nevada to shut down the casinos, and I just had to get you guys in here because it's very interesting, and I think people overlook some of the regulatory components of this situation here. So thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, Roger. Pleasure.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So obviously this is all unprecedented. I was talking to somebody the other day and telling them I've been in the business for 40 years and thought I've seen everything, and of course I hadn't. So what was the procedures then when it came to the Gaming Control Board ordering all the casinos to close?
Well, if you like, we could kind of walk you through the timeline of how it happened.
Yep.
It was much like watching a car accident in slow motion.
Yeah.
You knew it was coming. You didn't know exactly when, but obviously looking at countries like China and Italy, mm-hmm. you kind of knew more of a complete shutdown was in the works. But as you know, on March 13th, the governor declared a state of emergency in the state, and, you know, the casino properties began to take notice and realize that they might need to be shutting down soon. And he issued the directive closing all the schools on the 15th. And then on the 16th, by that point, a couple of properties had already unilaterally made the decision to shut down on their own. But the GCB put out a mandate with restrictions on, you know, if they were going to continue to operate during this time, you need to take some precautions. For example, there could be no more than 3 chairs at any table game. Each gaming machine has to be cleaned and sanitized at least once every 2 hours. Patrons can't serve themselves from buffets. You know, only staff utilizing the utensils can serve them food. And, you know, the gaming floor and public areas have to use the 6-foot social distancing guidelines. And it's kind of interesting because if you think about it, some of that might be what we're seeing come into actual regulations and practice, you know, for casino and other properties after the shutdown.
Right. Yeah. It sounds like that's going to be the procedure when they reopen as well. Jeff, what did you see? What did your clients call you and ask you about when this was happening?
One of my clients actually wanted to be able to keep the hotel portion open because essentially there were properties that had demand for their rooms. The order from the governor said that if you had guests staying there, that you didn't have to displace them, but everyone else had to be out as soon as practical, and there was going to be no new reservations. Motels were allowed to keep their customers since they didn't have gaming in in operation. But the general declaration on March 17th from the governor said all gaming devices, machines, table games, and any equipment related to gaming activity must be shut down by 11:59 p.m. on March 17th. Mm-hmm. And that included, like, slot machines in convenience stores, taverns, et cetera. So all of those other businesses closed, and the benefactors of any residual residency were the unaffiliated, non-gaming motel properties. And, you know, there is quite a demand for people, actually, when you think about it, because they may have a family member who's ill at home and needed to stay away from them. There could be circumstances where you could have a plumbing problem that your landlord wouldn't fix in your apartment, and you have to find a place to move to. And, you know, a number of my casino clients that had rooms were kind of upset that they didn't allow the hotel portions to remain open, at least in some fashion, to accommodate the needs of the local traveler.
Sure. I saw that the one casino, there's one casino in Vegas that had a branded kind of motel along with it, and they were allowed to keep that brand open, but the rest of the hotel had to close.
Yeah, it's a, like you said, it's unprecedented. You know, I've been around in the industry for as long or longer than you have, and I've seen all kinds of dramatic things occur, but nothing that goes to the heart of the economic engine for the entire state. And this is the anomaly here, that we're looking at. The hotel industry around the country has been totally decimated by this. You know, occupancy levels are probably down 90% from where they were even 2 months earlier. We were about to have a landmark year in the gaming and hospitality sector. Up until maybe the first week in March, it was setting records.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden drops down to nothing. So everybody has been shocked by this. And I think the shock and the awe that has been put upon us and put upon our industry is certainly felt as much here or more than any other place in the country.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. So, Jennifer, what was involved in actually shutting the casino itself down? Obviously, it's way more difficult than just turning the slot machines off.
Well, and it's funny, it's not just as simple as locking the doors, because as you know, a lot of these properties don't even have doors that lock because they never close. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as you've said, this is unprecedented. So we've kind of walked through some of the things that the casinos need to think about and comply with to make sure they maintain, you know, their licensing in proper stead with the Gaming Control Board, which, you know, in the midst of this crisis, it's kind of, you know, seems funny to think about these regulatory, you know, checks and boxes. But there are things that have to be done. So in a lot of ways, the changeover closure plan that's being requested by the Gaming Control Board, normally you would have to submit this. It was at 30 days or 10 days before a closure would take place. But given the immediacy of the closure in this case, you know, it's just as soon as possible after closure. So they have to get the shutdown plan, so to say, to the Gaming Control Board. So that needs to provide the contact information for the person coordinating the closure, a schedule for certain procedures. You know, at this time, we're going to close the games. At this time, we're going to do our last drop. At this time, we're going to close the vault, just to make sure that they have that procedure in place and it, you know, keeps money and people safe. Plans for security over the pit and other funds during the closure.
Sure.
You know, we can all imagine people thinking they're Ocean's 11 and break into these shuttered casinos and stealing chips or, you know, breaking into clients, you know, private safe boxes or whatnot during the closure. Obviously, nobody wants that to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, tragedy compounding on top of tragedy. And also, they had to take an inventory of their chip and token counts. So a lot of the same kind of things that they would be doing if you have a temporary closure of a casino in the regular course of things. As you know, sometimes casinos will close temporarily, like the Hard Rock closed to become the Virgin to do a renovation or a change of ownership. So it's a lot of the same kinds of things.
Sure, sure. So what kind of...
Well, the one thing, just to add to that, Roger, the one thing that never changes is that... any taxes that are due from the collection of markers and things of that nature have to be paid on time. And this did come at a time when the year-end financial statements are due 120 days after the end of the calendar year. You can get some dispensation for 30 or 60 days, but you have to apply for that with the audit division in order to get some consideration on a late filing in that vein. And also those people who won periodic jackpots, who have payments due, like megabucks and so on, they had to make arrangements to make sure that those people got paid on a timely basis, so as not to hurt the reputation of the gaming industry on the payment of those wagers.
Sure.
People who had safe deposit boxes in the hotel, they had to find a way to get people to allow people to have access to those boxes. And those are the kinds of things that protect the integrity of the gaming industry that are all part of the plan.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. iGamingPlayer.com was one of the first fully licensed affiliates in the New Jersey market. Through partnerships with all the major online casino, poker, and sports betting websites, iGamingPlayer has become one of the most trusted places where players visit before deciding where to gamble online. iGamingPlayer offers reviews of the online gaming sites, advice about how to play the games, odds and opinions on sports betting, and much more. Soon to be licensed in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Michigan, iGamingPlayer.com can make the difference between success and failure for new online casino, poker, or sports betting websites. For information on how to work with iGaming Player, visit iGamingPlayer.com. Now back to our podcast.
So what kinds of compliance issues are the casinos facing during the shutdown? Is there anything ongoing that they have to, for instance, when they decide to furlough or pay their employees, or do they have to inform the Gaming Control Board of those things?
Not specifically with respect to laying off workers. I mean, that's certainly within the purview of the casino company. But you know, there are all kinds of regulations pertaining to you know, how you treat your workers and so on. Those sexual harassment issues and things like that for the workers who remain. There isn't anything that says that you have to pay your employees. But I saw in one of the news releases today that the Wynn organization was paying people through the middle of June, and you know, hopefully other properties will follow suit to compensate these individuals that are not necessarily being covered by any of the federal programs, or those programs might be inadequate for them. So, with respect to the operation of the properties, if people have gaming work cards that need to be renewed, there's a lot of things that still might need to happen. But I think everybody is looking forward to the perspective side of this thing as to what happens when the properties are given the all clear horn in order to reopen.
Sure. Well, you know, there's gaming employees are like everybody in Nevada right now are in this lockdown mode. You're not supposed to leave your house for anything except for essential things and exercise, I guess. But obviously, the casino employees aren't going to be working. But do the gaming executives work? The vice presidents and people like that, they are working from home?
I would hope so.
Yeah, I would say.
I would hope they're thinking about this thing, because they don't want to be shocked at where the governor says, "Well, okay, you can go back to work now," and then say, "Well, what about the planning for all of this?" And I think that really is what absorbing most individuals' time, especially on the marketing side, as to how we're going to reintroduce gaming into the property and reopen the facilities.
Sure.
And I've heard some stories about you know, how things are intended to go, but right now everything is on a week by week basis as we're waiting for information.
Sure.
Events are being moved off and to future months and things of that nature. But it gets right down to the point of the seminal question is, how will this change the reaction of the customer to our market? I mean, this is a market that has been essentially looking at how to bring people together in groups. The last couple of years have been, you know, these casino stadium casino entities where people can get together and laugh and talk about things and games that are played by multiple individuals and poker tables and things like that.
Sure.
And the big run of the nightclubs with the crowds and the pulsating music and so on. These are all things that we've been marketing all these many years.
Right.
And you know, we don't know what the social re-engagement is all going to be about.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess we can only guess what the procedures will be for reopening. I guess you have procedures that are already in place for opening a new casino or opening a casino that's been sold. But, what are some of your best guesses of how the casinos will reopen and what will they have to go through?
Well, certainly as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
I was going to say, certainly they're going to reopen as quickly as possible. And as you all know, the directive has been expanded to April 30th.
Right.
So, May 1st is the first potential date that mm-hmm. we could see openings, certainly. And one of the things that they need to think about, and we covered this in the memo that we put out, is if the closure is going to be longer than the period where the directive has them shutting down.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're not going to be opening, right away
right.
after they have the green light, they need to let the Gaming Control Board know that
mm-hmm.
As well.
Right.
Well, you're going to have the facilities, the opening of the slot machines and the surveillance activities and so on. Those are all going to be up and running. That's one of the things that might be spot checked by the gaming agents. But when you think about the number of agents, if they're required to actually physically go out and look at every single slot machine that's being reopened, and all the properties are going to reopen, they're not going to be able to have enough manpower to do that. But from what I've heard, you can reopen the casino, but you have to understand that there's going to be customers that are willing to come in and gamble. Or actually, it's not even the gambling anymore as much as the fact that these casinos relying on a large portion of their markets to come from restaurants and shopping and
right.
other facilities. It's not like the old days when 9/11 occurred. We were primarily a gambling destination with 60 to 80% of the revenues in some properties coming from the gaming activity.
Right.
And now it's pretty much the other way around with 30 to 40% at the maximum coming from gaming. So you're looking at reopening restaurants that are maybe leased operations with other entities,
mm-hmm.
and nightclubs and things like that that are going to be there to attract the people. And then you're going to have to ask yourself whether the people are actually going to come back on day one or whether this is going to be more of a gradual situation like Mandalay Bay based where after the terrible shooting on October 1,
sure.
Whether or not those people are actually going to come back en masse.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's an element in your memo that you talked about, that the Gaming Control Board said the casinos have to have an infectious disease outbreak response plan. do we know what that is?
I'm guessing those were hastily written and probably in large part follow the CDC guidelines.
Yeah.
And anything that was put out by the health department and the health district.
So that would be the social distancing type of
sanitization, thing. Mm-hmm. Wearing of gloves,
right.
That kind of a thing.
Right. And mm-hmm. I'm sure, again, that will be in place during the opening.
Right. And I can imagine our buffets, our world famous buffets, will never be the same.
Yeah. I'm afraid so. Afraid not.
Well, you know, Roger, the casinos all have these terrorism response plans in
sure.
place and have practiced and have all kinds of meetings and discussions about how they might handle a terrorist attack, which could have been a biohazard attack. And many of those same things that they talked about in the terrorism response plans that are through Metro and the FBI and
mm-hmm.
so on are probably going to be incorporated into some of the things that they are looking at doing relative to a response to this disease, because eventually this disease is its own kind of terror.
Sure.
And
right.
mm-hmm. how do you respond to that? How do you clean? How do you make your property safe for your invitees? That's really the major issue.
Sure. And I'm wondering if there'll be some sort of health stipulations when the employees come back. Will they test them somehow to see if they've been exposed or will there be some sort of plan that if somebody gets sick, while they're on the game? I mean, that's got to be another nightmare for them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not to mention insurance coverage.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. I mean, every day, everybody is consumed by watching the news, and they're talking about these testing. Why haven't we had more testing? And recent developments have had this 15-minute result test kit. Well, if these 15-minute result test kits are out there in any kind of volume,
right.
Then the casino companies obviously are going to try and get their hands on them. I know that at one point, very early on in this, I had heard that the Wynn had a temperature monitor that actually was taking the guests' temperature as they walked into the door to see if anybody had a fever, and if they did, perhaps they were asked to leave or explain or something else. But you're getting into some issues that, legal issues that Jennifer could talk to you probably in a greater degree on, having to do with HIPAA regulations and health information privacy. Because if you start taking people's temperatures and accusing them of having some type of an illness, they're not capable of discussing that with you, and you might end up getting running afoul of some other federal laws.
Right. Yeah, no question about that. And just the liability of a casino. Obviously, you can't tell where you caught a disease, but they could still sue you, right?
No, they could certainly try.
Right.
They certainly will, for sure.
So I imagine, through the opening when they employ all these social distancing regulations, three seats at the table, maybe one out of three slot machines, How is the Great Gaming Control Board going to enforce all that?
Well, it's easy to enforce a regulation because the non-compliance has dramatic consequences.
Right.
So they can put out a regulation that says that minors aren't allowed in casinos, and maybe there's not an agent at the doorstep of every casino property looking for that. But when it happens, it's a major problem for your casino company.
So sure.
They could say you can only have three chairs at a blackjack table, and the agent might not be there at that time, but they rely on self-reporting nowadays in these compliance committee activities. And the casinos themselves take these regulations to heart in a very, very serious manner.
Right.
Absolutely.
So if they put out something, it will be complied with.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of self-motivation for compliance, rather than the stick that they're worried about.
Right.
Because obviously, any kind of outbreak that would get traced back to your property would be a PR nightmare. Mm-hmm. Look at what happened after the horrible MGM fire years ago. All the property changed a lot of things about themselves,
sure.
Having to do with the fire retardancy of material safety in the kitchens, the carpets they used. A lot of things changed, and I think properties are probably all looking at this right now.
Sure. I mean, this could dramatically affect the way you lay out a casino floor in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I liken this to the what happened after 9/11, everybody came to the airport thinking they were just going to come 10 minutes before the flight and jump on the plane
right.
and have the door hit you in the rear end.
Sure.
And then, of course, 9/11 happened and the shoe bomber guy. Now we've got this elaborate industry of NTA and checks and things like that. We don't know what effect this type of thing is going to have from a health perspective on how we continue to operate our businesses. But something as dramatic as this can't be just summarily forgotten and move on just as it was before. There has to be some changes in our overall activities and our method of conducting business that has to be altered as a result of this.
Sure. So we know that Nevada is very, very dependent upon gaming tax revenues, and without them, we'd probably fall apart. Jennifer, you work a lot with the legislators in Carson City. Have you been hearing from them about, how are they anxious to get back online so the revenues can start flowing again?
Well, certainly. But of course, they're primary interest is in the safety and the health
sure,
of Nevadans.
Right.
So, right now it's like, what do we need to do? All the various legislators and other electeds that I've spoken with, they're like, what do we need to do to keep people safe right now,
sure.
to convince people to stay in their homes, to make sure people are getting food,
mm-hmm.
To deal with the increase in, domestic violence that we're seeing in some situations,
right.
With people being cramped in homes together for long periods of time.
Sure.
So, I know that there's some thinking about the long-term planning, but right now it's really boots on the ground kind of.
Sure. Great. Mm-hmm. So just one more question, if you can both give me a wrap-up of what you think, will be the regulatory response when the opening is. Are regulations going to be relaxed a little bit in terms of reporting periods and things of that nature?
Most likely. I think that, you know, the regulators are here to help the industry to reopen right. as quickly and as, you know, easily as they can while mm-hmm. still maintaining, you know, safety, not just health safety, but, you know, the money instruments and that kind of thing. Make sure, right. you know, we don't encourage robberies or that.
Sure. Right. Right. And Jeff, just some final thoughts from you.
No, I would agree with that comment. The one thing I could say, having been a regulator myself and seeing the industry evolve over the years, is that the position of the regulators in Nevada has always been to try and work with the industry as much as possible rather than to be punitive against them. And we've seen some relaxation. You know, if you take a look at the state of New Jersey now and what they used to be with the state police attitude on thinking that there's going to be a mafia member behind every rock to the point of view now where almost anything goes in terms of the online gaming and some of the things that they have recently introduced. Nevada has always been pro-industry, but also pro-consumer protection. So
right.
They will allow a certain leeway, some inventiveness and creativity that I think the industry will have. I'm really excited about some of the marketing concepts that may come out of this thing, because I think it's going to take us to a new level. And I think that the future is very exciting relative to the consumer demand. Las Vegas is still the premier destination, and I know that the gaming regulators will be there to help it succeed and surpass what it has been before.
For sure. Well, everybody's going to have some serious cabin fever when this is over, so hopefully a lot of them will be coming to Vegas, a lot of the healthy people, and we can move forward from there.
I can say for sure that my dogs have adapted to my being around them all the time, and they're going to be very, very sad
right.
if I ever have to leave here again.
Right. Exactly. My dog's the same way. So thanks very much for joining us for this. It's very informative, and we'll stay in touch to find out what happens after the reopening. It's going to be an interesting time and hopefully a prosperous time for the industry.
Be well.
Yeah. Stay safe out there.
Hope you enjoyed this week's GGB podcast brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the affiliate marketing site players trust when deciding where to gamble online. For information on how your online or social casino can get involved, visit iGamingPlayer.com. To learn more about the regulatory schemes surrounding the coronavirus pandemic, visit GGBMagazine.com. Today, I got all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the coronavirus situation and its impact on gaming, including daily updates. Subscribe for free at ggbnews.com by using the code GGB180. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and Spotify today. So we'll see you next week on the GGB podcast.